me to chat about this and that, and then to include a speech or a letter or a song or whatever, and then to chat some more. I do not really consider this to be a masterpiece. I find it clumsy. I find it raw. It has some value, I think, as a confrontation between an American novelist and his own stubborn simplicity. I was dumb in school. Whatever the nature of that dumbness, it is with me still. I have dedicated this book to the de Saint-Andrés. I am a de Saint-André, since that was the maiden name of a maternal great-grandmother of mine. My mother believed that this meant that she was descended from nobles of some kind. This was an innocent belief, and so should not be mocked or scorned, or so I say. My books so far have argued that most human behavior, no matter how ghastly or ludicrous or glorious or whatever, is innocent. And here seems as good a place as any to include a statement made to me by Marcia Mason, the superb actress who once did me the honor of starring in a play of mine. She, too, is from the Middle West, from St. Louis. "You know what the trouble is with New York?" she asked me. "No," I said. "Nobody here," she said, "believes that there is such a thing as innocence." Whoever entertains liberal views and chooses a consort that is captured by superstition risks his liberty and his happiness. Clemens Vonnegut, 1824 to 1906. Instructions in Morals, The Hollenbeck Press, Indianapolis, 1900. Chapter 1. The First Amendment. I am a member of what I believe to be the last recognizable generation of full-time, lifetime American novelists. We appear to be standing more or less in a row. It was the Great Depression which made us similarly edgy and watchful. It was World War II which lined us up so nicely, whether we were men or women, whether we were ever in uniform or not. It was an era of romantic anarchy in publishing which gave us money and mentors willy-nilly when we were young, while we learned our craft. Words printed on pages were still the principal form of long-distance communication and stored information in America when we were young. No more. Nor are there many publishers and editors and agents left who are eager to find some way to get money and other forms of encouragement to young writers who write as clumsily as members of my literary generation did when we started out. The wild and wonderful and expensive guess was made back then that we might acquire some wisdom and learn how to write halfway decently by and by. Writers were needed that much back then. It was an amusing and instructive time for writers, for hundreds of them. Television wrecked the short story branch of the industry, and now accountants and business school graduates dominate book publishing. They feel that money spent on someone's first novel is good money down a rat hole. They are right. It almost always is. So, as I say, I think I belong to America's last generation of novelists. Novelists will come one by one from now on, not in seeming families, and will perhaps write only one or two novels and let it go at that. Many will have inherited or married money. The most influential of my bunch, in my opinion, is still J.D. Salinger, although he has been silent for years. The most promising was perhaps Edward Lewis Wallant, who died so young, and it is my thinking about the death of James Jones 2 years ago, who was not all that young, who was almost exactly my age, which accounts for the autumnal mood of this book. There have been other reminders of my own mortality, to be sure, but the death of Jones is central. Perhaps because I see his widow Gloria so often, and because he too was a self-educated Midwesterner, and because he too, in a major adventure for all of us, which was the Second World War, had been an enlisted man. And let it here be noted that the best-known members of my literary generation, if they wrote about war, almost unanimously despised officers and made heroes of sketchily educated, aggressively unaristocratic enlisted men. James Jones told me one time that his publisher and Ernest Hemingway's, Charles Scribner's sons, had once hoped